This is Droops.
And this is Obfuscated.
And this is Infonomicon. News you need.
Like it or not.
Rhythm and a high-tech sound that'll make you move your body down to the ground. We got Poindexter on the violin, and Lewis and Gilbert will be joining in. We got Booger Presley on the mean guitar, and a rap by little old me, Lamar. We got Tekashi beating on his gong. The boys and the moves are clapping along, and just when you thought you seen it all, along comes a lambda 4 foot tall. So warm, so come on out here on the floor, so we can work our bodies like never before. Break.
All of you, private.
Sir, 5'9", sir.
5'9". I didn't know they stacked shit that high. You trying to squeeze an inch in on me somewhere, huh?
Sir, no, sir.
Bullshit. It looks to me like the best part of you ran down the crack of your mama's ass and ended up as a brown stain on the mattress. I think you've been cheated.
Where in hell are you from anyway, private?
Sir, Texas, sir.
Holy dog shit. Texas, only steers and queers come from Texas, private cowboy. And you don't much look like a steer to me, so that kind of narrows it down. Do you suck dicks?
Sir, no, sir!
Are you a Peter Puffer?
Sir, no, sir!
I bet you're the kind of guy that would fuck a person in the ass and not even have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reach around. I'll be watching you.
This is the CBS Evening News. With Dan Rather reporting from CBS News headquarters in New York.
Good evening. Danger. War. Killer. Fraud. CIA. Mayhem. Crisis. Horrible. Inflation.
Military threat.
Flaming debris. Fatal heart attack. Stress injuries. Prison disaster. Economic collapse. Dangerous radiation. A tide of violence and human misery. A liar and an unremorseful killer. Communist international smuggling pipeline. Starving victims and how they die. Chemical weapons. Carpet bomb. Deaths. Top FBI. Kill and injure children. Police conspiracy.
Negative attacks.
Discipline, sex, and drinking binges, dying of a heart attack, dying of breast cancer, dying of a Japanese nuclear bomb, mountains of credit card debt, the mountain of cocaine, tons of cocaine.
And that's part of our world tonight. For the CBS TV News, Dan Rather reporting. Good night, and have a great weekend.
This is Droops.
And this is Obfuscated.
And you're listening to Infonomicon episode 21.
Episode 21 already?
Yes, already.
Excellent. And what? Release date for this one is November.
The 30.
30.
To the 0, to the 0.
0.
Okay, man, what we got going on for this week?
Well, Droops, I've been sitting in my house pretty much just masturbating a lot. How about yourself?
I've been building my house and getting pushed around by my wife. You know how it works.
Man, your wife is hot. I tell you what, I'd bang her.
Yeah, but you should see her tail.
Did she do anal?
Yeah.
Score.
Anyway, enough of this fun madness.
Jolly good time.
So what we got going on for this week? We got any special guest?
Yes, we do have a special guest.
Who? We do?
Yeah, we have some girl.
No special guest.
Oh, we can't call the girl?
She's sleeping.
Oh? This is Infonomicon. This is the power of I. Bitch, best wake up.
We call Google.
Who?
We call Google.
Okay, let's call Google. You want to?
Yeah, sure. You got the phone number?
You do. Call them up.
I don't have any more.
Why not? Droops, you fucking lose everything.
Don't you have something going on with your car computer?
What?
Car computer.
Yes, I purchased a new computer for my truck. And I'm going to videotape it pretty soon, as soon as I get my second battery installed in there and my isolator so I can power it with my alternator.
Any email or anything? Or?
I got an email from a guy that has a website at Kedora.net. It's Kedora. They're putting us on a RSS feed with a bunch of other shows like Doug TV, Hack TV, Patrolling, Pure Pwnage, which is funny as fuck.
And a bunch of shows that suck like ours.
It doesn't suck like ours. And there's all these really cool pictures, like Sean Kennedy flipping off a camera and cool shit. And then there's me with my shirt undone. Talking about power or Ethernet.
Which is illegal.
Which is highly illegal, according to some idiot. From where?
Did you find out who that was?
No.
I can't find Google's phone number.
I'm Googling for Google's phone number. It's not showing up.
The only thing that's not Googleable.
About Google, here we go. Contact us.
Okay, what's their phone number?
I don't know.
Well, you go look for that. Okay. And as you notice, I had some, we're doing the phone thing this week, which is some problem I've had with the hard drive on my recording machine.
But it's excellent because I get to go outside and smoke and piss in the woods.
Yeah,
because
his wife doesn't let him smoke in his own house.
Our house.
Huh?
It's our house.
Oh, she's making you say that, huh? That's cute.
Whatever. I get to live here for free.
And not work?
I work.
What do you do?
I renovate my house.
You're a contractor.
That's a job.
Are you a contractor?
No. I'm pretty much a sweaty guy that hammers and nails stuff.
Yep, you are in Mississippi, aren't you?
Yep. That's me. Well, our first article is going to be about pig wrestling.
Okay, I was going to contact Google. I found a phone number.
All right.
Let me see.
I have a Google Media hotline.
Yeah, that's what I found. We got corporate PR, David Crane. I'm going to call him.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Let's tell them we're from Infonomicon Radio and we're trying to get someone from Google to come on our show and talk about Google.
Okay, let's call the media hotline first.
Call them up.
Okay. Oh, for all you people listening at home, that is 650-930-3555. Droops, are you there?
I am here. two ringy dingy.
Actually, last time we called Google, I actually got one of their mailboxes. One of the corporate guys' mailboxes. Left a message. Never called me back. No one home?
I've reached Daniel Lemon and Google Corporate Communications. I will be out of the office from November 25th through December 6th and will not be checking voicemail or email. If this call is urgent, please try my colleague Debbie Frost on 650-623-4660, or you can send her an email at dfrost@google.com. Otherwise, please leave me a detailed message.
So that was going to cool.
I'm back in the office. Thank you.
Hi, Mr. PR. This is Obfuscated and Troops of the Infonomicon Radio Show. We want to send our warmest thanks to you for linking to us on your website. Anything to add, Troops?
Yes, if anyone from Google would like to talk about Google on our highly rated radio show, please contact us at droops@infonomicon.org.
That's D-R-O-O-P-S at info, I-N-F-O-N-O-M-I-C-O-N.com.
And if you can't find it, just Google for it.
We love your site. Later.
Later.
And that was Google, obviously.
The Google.
And we'll see if they hit us up.
You know, when that guy gets back from his really sweet vacation.
He gets a vacation. What a jackass.
Yeah.
And if you want to get contact with the press center, that's at google.com/press/mediacontacts.html.
HTML.
Which stands for Hide the Mullet Licks.
Yes. All right, buddy. Yeah, that's... So, you're looking for a hard drive for your computer.
Yes, that is correct.
I'm hacking up an old computer to take a new computer inside of it so I can have my luggable computer.
Whole lot of hardware going on.
A lot of hardware work. And that's about it. We're still selling T-shirts. If anyone wants one, please contact me at droopsinfonomicon.org. And we still have a keychain for someone that wants it.
But no one's emailed you about that.
But no one seems to want the keychain.
We're giving away free shit.
They don't realize how high quality this stuff is.
See, what's cool, you know, what I don't understand is that we give away free shit and no one wants it.
Like, all you have to do is give us your social security number, we'll find your address and stuff, and we'll send it to you.
No one likes us.
I don't like you.
I don't like you either.
All right. At least we agree on something, you stupid fuck. You ready to do some articles?
Okay.
I'm sorry. It seems my super elite portable phone has battery died.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do this.
Okay. So you ready to do some articles?
Sure, why not?
All right, I'm first. Well, since this is after Thanksgiving and it's officially Christmas shopping fever time, I have some awesome gifts that you can give people. The Consumer Product Safety Commission, the CPSC, is criticized for not doing enough to protect children from unsafe toys. Well, now they're stepping up to their annual holiday campaign against playtime hazards. They're plastering walls in firehouses and community centers with warning posters, which if anyone can find one of these warning posters and scan it, it'd be really cool. The idea is to get safety information of new parents, low-income families, minorities, and others who are often unaware of recalls. So pretty much if you're an old parent that makes lots of money, you know everything about recalls if you're not a minority. Anyway, says CPSC Chairman Hal Stratton, who announced the agency's top 10 list of dangerous toys yesterday. The list, available on their website at cpsc.gov, includes fake jewelry manufactured in India, a Hasbro Incorporated Nerf football. How is a Nerf football going to hurt you? A Mattel Incorporated Batmobile, some athletic shoes, and a radio-controlled toy truck.
These have all been recalled. So far this year, the CPSC has recalled 97 toys, which is a slight increase from last year. Over 200,000 children were injured by toys in 2003, and 11 were killed, mostly from choking on small parts. Consumer groups, including the Consumers Union and the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, availed their own list of hazardous toys, and they say return rates are typically under 30% and aren't convinced that the CPSC is doing enough to follow through on their recalls. Now, the industry is not really helping either. They're really good at selling shit, but they're unwilling to look at ways to get their products back, Sally Greenberg, Senior Counsel for Product Safety at Consumers Union, kind of said. The group wants a law requiring retailers to include registration cards that no one will ever fucking fill out, ever, with children's products, as they must do for car seats, so buyers can be tracked down in the event of a recall. The CPSC voted down registration card proposal in 2003 among strong opposition from industry groups. Oh, it looks like they're bitches. The guy from the CPSC, Mr. Stratton, says the idea would impose a huge regulatory burden for a negligible benefit. Of course, pointing out that McDonald Corporations, which is technically the world's largest toy seller, would have to keep a database for each toy given out in Happy Meals. And Toy Industry Association says the cards would cost sellers $1.8 billion or 50 cents per card. Jesus Christ, 50 cents a card.
I say they just put RFID.
Fuck, we
got to
get that contract selling these people cards, man.
Man, listen, I don't believe in all this recall shit.
Anyway, there's 97 things listed on their CPSC.gov site. Buy them for people. That's what they really want for Christmas.
So what's
back
the,
to you, Tom.
What's the primary cause of death of toys?
Choking on small parts.
And what else can you choke on?
Big dicks.
Dildos. Anything you can imagine you can choke on.
Rice.
Yeah.
Crackers. You can choke on a lot of things.
I just don't
believe... Actually, the Nerf Play Football, it's the Nerf Big Play Football, which seems to have a screen that opens up and you can call plays on it. It's got a hard plastic interior which can cut a child. Or they can run, catch the ball, and fall on a stick, which will also cut them, but it's part of fucking playing.
You know, George Carlin said one time, the one who eats the marbles doesn't grow up to have, like, dumb children of his own. You see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
It's called natural selection. Kids that do stupid shit don't grow up. They have kids that do stupid shit. The reason why we have an abundance of ignorant people is because we let them live. They never had their chance to die and fade out.
This is true.
I want a recall on humanity.
Well, that guy from, like, wherever the fuck he was from, Budapest or whatever, that cut his wiener off, he's not having any more kids.
Well, he was old anyway. He has
whatever, we should, they should have a recall on that knife, because you might actually cut a wiener off.
Oh, man, people are so pussies.
Ah.
Speaking of huge, dripping, wet pussies, JFK shooting game provokes anger.
The what?
We'll get to it. Hold on. A Scottish firm has been criticized by the family of JFK, John F. Kennedy, for producing a game which recreates the president's assassination in Dallas. The title of the game is JFK Reloaded. Was released on Monday to coincide with the 41st anniversary of the president's assassination.
That's an anniversary.
What's that?
That's just something to celebrate, I guess, huh?
Yeah. David Smith, a spokesperson for Senator Ted Kennedy, you know, the drunk, the brother of JFK, said the PC game was despicable. The spokesperson...
Despicable.
A spokesperson for Traffic Games said it was encouraging youngsters to take an interest in history. Well, let me finish this. The Sterling-based company argued that the game was aimed at disproving theories that a conspiracy rather than lone gunman Lee Harvey Oswald was responsible for the assassination. The creators said that they had written to Senator Kennedy before the release of the game, which allows players to simulate the shooting. Kurt Ewing, company manager, director, and a former documentary filmmaker, said he understood that some people would be horrified at a game, but he went on, this is a quote from him, We have a large respect for the John Kennedy family. We are hoping to do is reignite people's passion for history. This is a unique insight into the assassination. We think there's a whole generation of people who have no experience of the Kennedy assassination, which basically means they don't read their history books. The game is effectively a reconstruction of the event using video game technology, but it's being sold on regular game machines. It's not a simulation. I hasn't to add that we don't regard it as a video game because there's no imagination being used to create the scene.
So what are they going to do for, like, a second version of this, like JFK Jr. Flight Simulator?
Jack Yonass is the drug lord. She did a lot of pills. Okay.
Like a offshoot of this could be like the Sonny Bono skiing instructor.
Ted Kennedy driving school.
Ted Kennedy. Okay,
for those of you who don't know, Ted Kennedy killed a woman many years ago. Anyone who drove her off the bridge or some shit like that?
Yeah. Despicable. How come he's the only Kennedy that hadn't died yet?
I don't understand. He's like the shitty one, and he hasn't died.
Yeah. Like the good one died in like World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And then JFK died getting capped by Oswald.
Right. And then the, was it a cousin died? Well, who? The one that got assassinated. The other one. Bobby?
I'm not sure.
Bobby?
Yeah. Bobby.
I don't know if that was his cousin or what. But anyway, that's another assassination. They're a bunch of fuck-ups.
Well, actually, President Kennedy, I was reading a thing on him the other day. There's been some speculation about how his little boat got rammed, whether they were all just drunk or sleeping or whatever. But, like, he swam, like, a couple hours towing people to, like, save their lives. Like, he was quite the little hero in World War II.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Well, I mean, it's just, he was, people should read up on that. It's very interesting.
Well, so what do you think about the video game?
So you get to be the president or do you get to be Oswald?
No, you're Oswald. You're looking through the book depository and you're shooting Kennedy.
Okay. Does it end right there or does it end when, like, Ruby caps you or?
That's what I don't understand. It doesn't go, like, in the depth about the actual game itself. And I don't even know if it's released here or not because it's, like I said, it's a foreign product.
Okay.
And I don't know if, you know, you're not allowed to say certain things about the president, you know what I'm saying? That we're not going to get into here, but I don't know if you're allowed to have a video game doing that too. I don't know, you see.
Well, you can have a movie that says whatever fuck it wants.
True.
You should have a video game that does it.
I think it's just fuck it. It's distasteful.
Well, I hope they make a lot of money off of it.
I think it really is as tasteful.
Because I don't think they did it to increase history.
No. No kid is why. No kid's playing this like, it's not a video game, it's a simulation. No
it's
kids
a simulation.
Are,
watch me shoot Kennedy. Ooh, I got a golden triangle.
Well, you can shoot anybody else. Like, you know, you can shoot Jackie in the face.
Excellent. Or that governor of Texas guy.
Unfortunately, no. He made his money telling that story 1,000 times.
Yeah.
What a fucking story, though. That'd be worth getting shot for.
Yeah. No.
You wouldn't take a bull to be able to tell that at parties?
Not really.
I was in the car when JFK got killed. I still got a pint of his blood in my fucking wallet. Hold on. Let me take it out.
Let me show you the blood.
I kept it. I scraped it off and I kept it.
All right. Well, my turn, huh? All right. Well, as it pushes, tell me the second you guess who this article is about. As it pushes to settle other antitrust suits, so-and-so company faces new potential damaging allegations about its business conduct and a patent theft and monopolization case pending in a federal court in Baltimore.
Woo, 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 woo. You have won the 1,000th anti-Microsoft article.
In a court filing unsealed late Monday, a small Silicon Valley software company called Burst.com Incorporated alleges that Microsoft routinely destroyed much of its internal email despite the many federal investigations and private suits it had faced in recent years when it was offered under court's orders to preserve such communications. Burst.com, whose early investors, including the Irish rock band U2, what the fuck?
Hey, Irish fucking, like, glam dancers. Go ahead.
It charges that Microsoft used Burst digital media technology in Windows, solving a technical problem that was slowing the acceptance of Internet video. Burst also claims that Microsoft tried to patent the technology after a technical briefing from Burst and altered Windows so that Burst products wouldn't work with Microsoft. Microsoft, of course, denies the charges. These claims and documents, unsealed in a pretrial proceeding, suggest that Microsoft continued the use of some of the same bare-knuckle tactics described in the U.S. government's 1998 antitrust case, which was settled by the Bush administration in 2001. Microsoft has moved aggressively since then to settle the remaining case, paying a total of more than $3 billion in consumer lawsuits and to rival Sun Microsystems, Time Warner, as well as $536 million to Novell last week. It's also paid $600 million to European regulators. As we said from the start of the case, Burst claims that without merit and technology issue is based on Microsoft's own work and innovation, a Microsoft spokeswoman, Stacey Drake, said yesterday. She said that Burst is using the real issue of email to obscure the real points of this case. Now, these document destruction allegations emerged following Burst's claim earlier this year that internal emails needed for the case were missing from Microsoft's files. Microsoft later admitted some of the emails were missing, blamed an outside contractor, and subsequently provided more documents. A U.S. district judge has ordered Bill Gates, Microsoft's chairman, and Jim Allchin, that's his name, Allchin, to stop Windows.
You know, Jim, he's Allchin.
He's got, like, no chin. He's funny looking. On top of Windows executive to be questioned under oath in the case. In the newly unsealed filing, Burst outlines what it says a previous undisclosed Microsoft policy of deleting most emails. While such a policy isn't illegal, companies are required to save relevant emails and documents if they face federal investigation or private lawsuits. In the filing, Burst alleges, next page, that Microsoft misled the Justice Department lawyers in 2002 to conceal this email destruction practice, and in several instances didn't save emails from executives who were crucial to U.S. inquiries and private suits. A senior Microsoft executive in January said on the email, "I mean this purge every 30 days. Just weeks after a federal judge found the Justice Department's earlier case that Microsoft was a monopoly and violated antitrust law. Amplifying his point, Mr. Allchin, who faced the tough cross-examination in the earlier trial, based some of his own emails, followed up with an email to the entire Windows group. This is not something you get to decide. This is company policy," he wrote. "Do not archive your mail. Do not be foolish. 30 days.
Did he take it on the chin?
I guess so. But in its case, Burst has said that it has documents including handwritten notes of a July 2000 meeting inside Microsoft that will show the senior managers in Microsoft's multimedia group secretly decided to adopt Burst's approach as its own and write their own patents, one of which is pending for the Patent Office. The technology aimed at solving the problem of jerky, poor-quality video and audio then plagued Internet-based media transitions. Now, in 2000, Burst, with its own patents, was flying high, had $19 million, including new financing. Companies such as Yahoo, America Online were testing technology, and the band U2 was touting its product as the best way to broadcast live music on the web.
Ireland tripe.
The company made their mistake when they met with Microsoft several times that year, and while Microsoft initially dismissed this technology, it conflicted with an alternative technical approach Microsoft was using. It later saw Burst technology as a way to fix the poor quality of streamed media on the web, according to Burst legal filing in the case. Burst says its patented approach involves sending video streams at variable, faster than real-time speeds, responding to changes in the network capacity and storing it briefly on the user's computer, thus allowing smooth playback.
Microsoft's objection, according to Burst, was that the rival software ran on Linux, a rival operating system software, as well as Windows, and at the time, Microsoft was battling to gain control of media software. Burst charges that Microsoft altered its new Windows Media Player to make it incompatible with Burst, killing the product and pushing the company near collapse. It also claims Microsoft's patent applications were nothing more than updates of Burst's approach. As Burst neared the brink, documents unsealed in the case show, Microsoft managers debated whether to buy the company in a fire sale price as an insurance policy against a future patent suit, or just let it die.
Oh, that's it? What, they got like 15 pages?
Yes, that was a long article, but it just, I fucking hate Microsoft, and I wanted to read the whole motherfucker for everyone.
I don't understand why you always have to be down on Microsoft.
Out to what?
I don't understand why you always have to be down on Microsoft.
Okay, let's say you have a really good idea for some new kind of butt cream. And you
Boudreaux's
come tell me about your
Boudreaux's
butt cream, and I'm like, man, your butt cream sucks.
I'm going to call it Boudreaux's butt paste.
That's actually a real thing. And then I went and copied your butt cream and patented it and pretty much laughed at you. And then I said, maybe I'll just pay you off so you won't sue me. And then when the federal government's investigating me on this, instead of having all my emails saved to my people and I was laughing about how retarded you were, I tell them that they have to delete them, no matter what. 30 days! So, fuck them. And if they lose this, they're going to lose, you know, $20 million, and it's going to be a drop in the bucket. It doesn't fucking matter to them.
They should give it to us to do the show.
Fuckers. Fucker. All right, your turn.
You're such an angry person.
I am a very, very not angry person, you fucker.
Speaking of things exploding, exploding cell phones a growing problem. I don't think it is.
I think it's awesome.
Curtis said it was like a bomb going off. His 13-year-old son, Michael, stood stunned, ears ringing, hands gushing blood after his cell phone exploded. Safety officials have received 83 reports of cell phones exploding or catching fire in the past 2 years. That's a low number, usually because of bad batteries or chargers. Burns to the face, neck, legs, and hip are among the dozens of injuries reports to the Consumer Product Safety Commission has received. The agency is providing tips for cell phone users to avoid such accidents and has stepped up oversight of the wireless industry. There has been three voluntary battery recalls, and the CPSC is working with companies to better battery standards. This will quote, CPSC is receiving more and more reports of incidents involving cell phones, and we're very concerned of the potential of more serious injuries or more fires, said agency spokesperson Scott Wolfson. U.S. report makers and carriers said most fires and explosions are caused by counterfeit batteries. and note that a country with some 170 million cell phone users, the number of accidents is extremely low. That's it. That's the you know, people are carrying their cell phones around, talking on the phone, talking about, oh, is Michael going to come pick me up this evening? Oh, no, girl, what should I wear? And I'll... I don't think it's the batteries. I think it's just people with these, I think it's terrorists killing all the annoying people.
I think we should, like, if you buy a Nokia phone and then you don't want to pay for a new battery from Nokia and you buy, like, some off-brand, and the thing explodes in your face, it should be Nokia's fault. We should sue them. And the government should regulate this.
And why is that?
I don't know. I'm just bitching.
Too much government regulation. There should be other battery. Oh, are you saying that Nokia makes sure that no other battery maker can make its batteries?
No, I think they should just be able to accept anybody's battery. Like, if we want to make a battery for the Nokia, it should fucking work.
Well, it's not Nokia's fault. Somebody else has to conform to Nokia standards of the phone.
I know. And it's their own fucking fault they got burned.
True. This is a warning, you know. If you need a battery for a Nokia phone, you should probably get a Nokia battery. So when you go to sue, you know Nokia's got more money than Peterson warehouse of batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And Taiwan. Taiwan makes nothing good. Cell phone batteries nor ice trays. And now Drew's for another Microsoft bashing article. Go ahead.
Okay, speaking about how much I hate Microsoft. Nestled in a valley, amid the mountains of scenic West Virginia, surrounded by farmland and national forest.
Is this a Summer's Eve commercial?
Yes. Oh. Sits a giant white dish that scientists use to study the darkest corners of the universe.
Durr, durr.
Dun, dun. This dish, more than 2 acres in size, serves as the antenna for a powerful telescope used by astronomers to collect faint radio waves emitted by distant stars and galaxies. It's part of an observatory set up in Green Bank, West Virginia, nearly 50 years ago and financed by the federal government for university research. But it's an endangered species. Scientists at the observatory are fighting an endless battle to save their highly sensitive telescope from man-made interference. Nearly every day, engineers must track down an unknown radio source, such as a faulty power line or home appliance that's spoiling their readings. And more, the astronomers find themselves fighting decisions in Washington that could threaten their ability to continue their research. To protect this observatory, the Federal Communications Commission created a National Radio Quiet Zone in 1958. This zone, which covers 13,000 square miles in Virginia, West Virginia, and Maryland, restricts radio transmissions in the area and gives scientists at the observatory a say in where radio transmitters or cell phone towers can be placed in the zone. A West Virginia state law gives the observatory even more authority to restrict signals within 10 miles of the telescope. Deep within the zone, there can be no cell phone coverage or radio stations. On the observatory's grounds, cable TV lines are buried, with computer rooms are shielded with sheets of copper, and staffers have to drive diesel cars which don't create harmful sparks upon ignition. But keeping this quiet zone silent has become increasingly difficult among the spread of such things such as wireless technologies and cell phones and Wi-Fi computer networks, and a push by the FCC for ever more flexible use of the electromagnetic spectrum. Of course, concern to radio astronomers is the rollout of new services, like broadband service delivered through power lines or cars with radar collision avoidance systems. We're struggling with the mushrooming growth in wireless services, says Christopher Reynolds, a Prince Frederick, Maryland, who's a lawyer who's fought to protect the quiet zone since the 1960s. Mr. Reynolds says it's a classic struggle between government trying to find a way to facilitate rapid deployment of new advanced communication services and trying to protect the radio astronomers whose work cannot be done elsewhere. To some extent, I'm sometimes surprised that a relatively small group of scientists have been successful, as they have been, protecting the quiet zone, says Thomas Grinder, who's electromagnetic spectrum manager at the National Science Foundation in Arlington, Virginia.
Are we still talking about this? Story.
What's that?
I don't know. I just took a piss. I was wondering if I came back and are you still talking. Go ahead.
The science of radio astronomy dates back to the 1930s, and the work of Bell Labs physicist Carl Jansky. While investigating disturbances in transatlantic telephone services, he discovered that radio waves were emancipating from the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Over the decade, radio astronomers have won a number of Nobel Prizes for their discoveries, including the first quasar, an extremely bright object in distant galaxies, and remnants of the Big Bang. That's actually a question on Rimmer's test when he's trying to become an officer on Red Dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
What the quasar. That's what it is. If he'd listen to our show, he'd fucking know. Stupid fuck. Now, the Big Bang, of course, was a cosmic explosion that many scientists believe was responsible for the creation of the universe. Many astronomical bodies emit radio waves that travel millions of light years before reaching Earth. Since they have much longer wavelength than visible light, radio waves are able to penetrate much of the gas and dust in space, as well as planetary atmospheres. Radio telescopes can therefore obtain much clearer pictures of the stars and galaxies than is possible by means of optical observation if there is no signal interference. Now, this task of preserving the quiet zone falls to Mr. Reynolds and a team of scientists at Green Bank. The radio frequency interference team spends hours every week driving around in a vehicle equipped with sensitive antennas and special gear to pinpoint local sources of interference, like a broken knot in the electronic fence. They must also monitor thousands of cell phone towers and broadcast antennas in the zone to ensure they don't disrupt the telescope, which is an increasingly time-consuming and difficult task.
We're putting out fires that are about 3 feet high, says Wesley Sizemore, a technical specialist on the team that has been tracking down sources of interference around Green Bank for 20 years. It's a constant battle. We don't have the luxury of adding additional staff to fight new problems while fighting the old battles are still not lessening. Now, the FCC, of course, is largely upholding this quiet zone and has set up a similar radio coordination zone in Puerto Rico to protect the telescope and, I don't know how to say that word, RCBO, whatever, that SETI gets their information from. The FCC says the public benefit of the research conducted at the observatories justifies the extra burdens of the regulations. Earlier this year, the agency streamlined the process for applying for licenses within the Green Bank Zone, but it said its rules had been largely successful in protecting the observatories and facilitating the rollout of new technology. So pretty much around this quiet zone area, you don't get cell phone reception, and you don't get radio, and some people have to drive diesel cars, but it's all in the name of science, and I think that's pretty damn neat.
Okay.
And that's pretty nerdy. I'm into this.
I'm going to go home and watch Nova tonight.
Let's go watch some Nova. Okay, Bastard, it's your turn.
Man, what are you reading now? Fucking National Geographic this week or something? Or
no, I'm reading a Wall Street Journal.
My God, news has been slow this week.
What I find interesting, what other people find interesting, may be different.
Yep.
But you can shut the hell up. Actually, I had a lot of coffee today.
And I am really fucking tired.
I am too, but the coffee's keeping me going.
I've been putting myself on a bedtime, and we're treading on it, so let's go. Let's go.
Go, champ, go.
Yeah. Claims over taser safety are challenged. Taser International, whose electronic guns are used by thousands of police departments nationwide. Nationwide says that a federal study endorses the safety of its guns, but the laboratory that conducted the research disagrees. Taser said last month that the government study, whose full results had not been released, found that its guns were safe. Since that statement, the company's stock has soared, and its executives as directors have sold $68 million in shares, about 5% of Taser's stock, and nearly half their holdings. But the Air Force laboratory that conducted the study now says that it actually found that the guns could be dangerous and that more data was needed to evaluate their risk. The guns may have several unintended effects, albeit with low probabilities of occurrence, the laboratory said last week in a statement released after the synopsis on tasers. And the company's guns are known and other weapons intended incapable people without killing them. I don't know. Tasers have been around for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah.
And they're still saying, you know, well, we got to get the police officers tasers instead of guns because we don't want them to, you know, shooting anybody in the toe.
They can fuck off.
Yeah, just give these cops guns.
It's big a good guns.
Good technology's been around forever.
Yeah.
Well, not forever, but for a really long time. And it's highly effective at doing its job. And I'm for the tasers, too.
They should have both. Shoot them, then tase them.
I'm all about the tasers, but of course some people have had heart attacks. Which is... what you expect? You're shooting electricity into somebody's body. Tasers are highly effective. Of course, every once in a while somebody dies. Okay, then go back to the guns then. What are you going to do? Go big sticks? You know, we're not, you know, the cops need guns.
Yeah.
Of some sort. So you're for the tasers or for the,
Look, if someone's coming at me with a gun, I don't want a taser.
Tasers are good, though.
Of course, someone's coming out with me, like, with a stick. I don't want a stick. I want a gun.
Have you ever been hit by a taser?
No. You ever been shot by a gun?
No. I've been hit by a taser. And let's just say, those things aren't fucking pretty. Knocked me cold out.
Hey, do you need a new computer?
No, I don't need a new computer.
Pentium 2 400. It's got 128 megs of RAM, 3 gig hard drive. It's got a CD drive.
How much?
Current bid right now is $10.
Is it reserved?
No. It's from that place that I got my computer from. It's going to cost you, like, tax. It's going to be, like, $12.85.
Well, email it to me. Email me the username.
Okay. All right, back to internet radio.
Well, as I was saying, I don't know. I like the idea of tasers, but of course this goes on to say, you know, there's been some instances with the tasers, like, many police officers say that tasers give them a way to restrain dangerous suspects without using firearms or fighting with them. But civil liberties groups, which we love them, say police often use tasers on people who are merely unruly or disobedient, not dangerous. Recently, police officers in Miami shocked a 6-year-old boy and a 12-year-old girl in separate instances, prompting widespread criticism. Number one, I want to know what instances they are and what situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been like 12-year-old, 6-year-old that kill people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you never know what those instances are. Maybe it was a fuck up. Maybe it was some you know, cop went to go say, "Hey, kid," and actually he's like, "Hey."
Whatever. Every once in a while,
it's gonna be a fuck up.
An accident, and there's a fuck up.
And it happens with guns.
Part of fucking being it.
And it happens with guns.
Yeah.
It happens with big sticks. So. I'm all got about getting them fucking Gatling guns.
Just big fucking Gatling guns.
What are those guns that you have to actually put the powder into and stuff it?
Black powder gun?
No. You have to get a big ass pole and just stuff it in there.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about? The kind of use in World War One.
Okay.
Those.
Okay.
I want to see some bank robbers with those things. They go. It's like, hold on. They got to stuff their fucking powder back in the gun.
All right.
Those guns are cool.
Excellent.
And I want cannons being brought back.
Hell yeah, cannons are fucking scary.
Like, you know, there's a hold up at a bank, you know, we're not coming out until we see, like, you know, till we get a helicopter out here, you know? And the cops are like, okay. They bring out this cannon.
While I was spending some time this past week in the place of no technology, The one thing that they did have was a really, really big TV with lots of fucking channels, and that's something that I don't have in my house. I've got like 20 computers and no fucking TV. And there's a show on the History Channel, like the History of Tech or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
History Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about these fellas, and they believe it was in California. They organized their own militia. And they decided they wanted to get this guy who was a politician and gunned someone down in the streets, and he was locked up in the jail. And the two guys in the jailhouse said, "No, you can't have him." So they just wheeled a cannon over there, pointed at the front door of the jail, and they're like, "All right, you want to try this again?" And then immediately the prisoners were released into their hands. You get a lot of power out of a cannon.
Where can you buy cannonballs at?
You steal them from national parks.
Like on Vicksburg or Gettysburg.
Yeah, go up to Vicksburg.
Just a whole lot of fucking cannon out.
Look, I would just like to, I don't know if I've ever said this. Maybe I have. I remember telling somebody this. The Louisiana Tech, it's a college in Louisiana, they have a cannon that the Kappa Alpha fraternity shoots off at every home football game whenever Tech scores.
They actually shoot a fucking cannon.
Well, they don't put a cannonball in it. They just put a little powder charge in it and shoot it.
Oh.
It's mainly a lot of smoke.
So it actually works?
Yes. That cannon is actually property of Vicksburg. But Vicksburg doesn't know that because it was like a fraternity prank in like the early 90s. And
somebody just wheeled off a cannon?
Over there and stole a fucking cannon.
How do you steal a cannon?
Well, you have to ask the people that stole it.
Well,
I want to know how they rode 2 hours back across the interstate with a cannon in the back of somebody's truck.
Okay, for those of you not listening who's never been to Vicksburg or Gettysburg, A can is a very large object that doesn't fit on truck beds. I don't care how big your truck is. It don't...
Well, maybe they had a trailer. I'll have to ask some people connected with the story.
What kind of trailer?
It's not like a big siege cannon. It's just like a little parrot cannon. Not a parrot cannon. It's a little bigger than a parrot cannon. It's not a big cannon.
Oh, it's not
little,
like one of those,
it's
like...
It's just a little movable field piece. It's
so
not like some big, like...
It.
Huh?
Is it big enough to sit on?
Yeah. Like, it's not... Like, you sit on sideways. Like, it'd crush your nuts. It's like a movable field piece. Like, you put it behind two horses and pull it.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking about
this
big one.
Not like
one.
A big siege cannon, yeah.
No, I want a big one.
I want one that can move around.
No. I want one I could put, like, in the middle of the road and just see how many cars I can get.
Excellent.
They're very low-tech.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Pretty much, you put some powder, you put a charge, you put a fuse, you light it, you cover your ears.
Well, no, you had to put something in there.
Yeah, and then you clean it and do it again.
Yeah.
There's actually some danger when you're doing this. If you're shooting it too much, it'll get so hot that when you put the fuse in it, it'll instantly ignite. And so before you load it, you actually swab it with cold water to cool it down a little bit for you. Anyway,
how
I wasn't
know this,
but we had a cannon.
Oh, you get to play with it?
Yeah.
Did you get to shoot it off?
No, but like they shot it off every Sunday at like the dress parades. And everyone had to try not to jump when they shot the cannon off. They'd play the national anthem and then they'd shoot the cannon.
Okay, enough of that. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. The first of a new breed of viruses has escaped from the laboratory and is spreading throughout the air. A cluster of cases have been traced to a crowded meeting hall in Singapore, and global travelers have already carried the infection to Europe and the U.S. Experts fear the bug, that's for now, it's relatively harmless, may quickly evolve into a more virulent and dangerous form. Now, this isn't some avian flu or SARS or things like that. It's C-A-B-I-R, Caber, I don't know. It's the first virus targeted at mobile phones. It spreads via a wireless technology known as Bluetooth that is found in many cell phones and other devices such as PDAs, printers, shit like that. And infected phones seek out other vulnerable devices and send them the virus in the form of a small software file. Once the file is installed, the device is infected, and the process repeats itself. That makes Caber the first digital virus that spreads much through the same way as traditional diseases through airborne transmission. Now, of course, mobile devices...
Why
device-
all the, like, the fucked up diseases and viruses come from Asia?
Because those people hump each other. Nastily. Rice patties and shit. I don't know. I'm going to get some karate done on me now. Mobile devices such as cell phones and handhelds are the new frontier for the world's virus writers and hardware hackers. As more mobile gadgets come equipped with sophisticated software and new networking features, they are becoming vulnerable to the nuisances that affect personal computers, from spam to spyware to financial fraud. With cell phone makers largely playing down the problem, and most users unaware of it, the creators of malicious software or malware for mobile devices has a sizable head start on those trying to thwart them. And some security experts fear the next generations of viruses will be even more potent as hackers, learn to exploit the vulnerabilities of networking technologies such as Bluetooth. Now, Caber appears to be the work of an underground virus group known as 29A, based in Spain, which claimed credit for the bug in June. A month later, the same group announced DUTS, DUTS, the first virus targeting pocket PC handheld devices running software for Microsoft Corporation. Both viruses were considered proof of concepts that demonstrated the possibilities of mobile devices but didn't cause substantive damage. The group's website explains, in general, we're up against destructive payloads and the spreading of viruses, but we do not forbid our members to include destructive payloads in their viruses. Caber moved from the laboratory into the wild, and then when an unknown person posted its code to a public web server. In October, cell phone users at a trade show in Singapore received the virus from infected phones, according to somebody from F-Secure. The virus is well-behaved. When it first attacks a mobile gadget, it asks if you'll accept a message over the Bluetooth connection. Then it asks twice for approval before installing a file.
the one that contains the virus. If you agree, a message appears on the cell phone screen saying, CarbVZ/29A. The only real damage Kebir affects is it strains the cell phone battery as the device continually scans for additional machines to infect. A separate group apparently is responsible for another virus called Bredor, which infects pocket PC devices running Windows software. The bug opens a back door on the gadgets by sending their internal internet address to an attacker and leaving an internet port open to receive further instruction. That allows the hacker to upload... Why is it always the hacker?
Because hackers
upload,
are fucking idiots.
Yeah, and download files to and from the infected device and execute other commands remotely, effectively giving the attacker full control over the gadget. According to Kaspersky Labs, a Russian antivirus company that identified Bradore in August, the programmer included a line in the code exhorting fellow hackers, "Get to work, folks. The pocket PC market will soon explode."
This is the only Bluetooth transmitted?
Fear so. And if this threat of viruses...
Of course,
are
more of the article.
You complain, I'm going to read the whole bitch. Security experts have uncovered vulnerabilities in Bluetooth itself that hackers could exploit to make it much easier to transmit viruses. Bluetooth is short-range wireless technology that lets devices exchange information over a distance of 100 feet, making it useful for connecting wireless cell phone headsets, exchanging electronic business cards, and even delivering ads to mobile devices. The technology isn't limited to cell phones. It's being built into laptops, automobiles, medical devices, home security systems, and a host of other devices. It's already a standard on most European cell phones, and it's increasingly popular in the U.S. A global marketing research firm, IMS, estimates that globally 120 million Bluetooth-enabled devices will be shipped this year. This way, Bluetooth is implemented on certain devices can usually be open to blue snarfing, in which an attacker snipes or snarfs contact lists, images, and other data, as well as blue bugging, where the intruder commandeers the phone to make calls or send text messages. Both attacks could potentially be compliant with viruses such as Kaber to spread malicious code without the need for permission of those recipients. The flaw in Bluetooth that allows blue snarfing was announced last November by a British researcher named Adam Laurie. He demonstrated the technique in a London underground station, where 2 hours he found 77 phones with Bluetooth configurations that made them vulnerable to the attack. Later in the British Parliament, he ran an attack from a laptop in his backpack, finding 8 vulnerable phones in 14 minutes. And there, I'm done with my Bluetooth article. Turn Bluetooth off on your phone unless you really fucking need it. Then turn it back off when you're done.
Man, we got a long fucking War and Peace kind of fucking articles today, huh?
Yes, I found interesting things that I wanted to read.
Man. Woo!
Okay, oh. I'm going to pick a short article next one.
Oh, no, I got to relax from that one, smoke a cigarette.
Yeah, I wish my portable phone battery hadn't died so I could go smoke a cigarette also.
Okay, what's going on in the world today? This is Obfuscated.
What?
And he's Droops, and you're listening to Infonomicon.
Are we starting over again?
No.
Thank God.
No, I couldn't take those articles again, believe me.
Oh, those are the short ones.
Oh, here we go. I'm sure we got some Walter Mossberg.
Oh, let me see if I have some Walter Mossberg.
His are short. I like his.
All right, I got a funny one for the next one. It's your turn. Go.
Okay, man.
Fuck ass.
Cigarettes are good. Leave me alone. I'm relaxing.
Fucker.
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 Some security experts suggest the trend toward using hackers to test the security of computer systems is changing. Thomas Patterson, the former regional partner for Deloitte and Touche Security Services Group, likened the practice of hiring ex-hackers to place a fox in the henhouse. For years, there existed a fuzzy distinction between good and bad computer hackers. Black hat hackers were known to crack into computer systems for the challenge and the bragging rights. These miscreants... I like that word. Took great pleasure from wreaking havoc once they gained entry. White hat hackers, on the other hand, of the ethical line broke into systems to alert company officials to their inefficient systems. As concerns about network security grew, computer security companies sprung up and often recruited their experts from the ranks of the white hatters. Law enforcement and government agencies in the recent past also relied on programmers turned reformed criminals to test for security leaks and help plug holes to keep out other intruders. IT managers sometimes had to choose between the threat of black hat hackers breaking into their system and white hat hackers compromising the system for future personal gain. Computer security experts suggest the trend toward using hackers to test the security of computer systems is changing. Thomas Patterson, the former regional partner for, we already had this, basically some guy works at a big company, wears a suit and talks on the cell phone a lot, says, it's like placing a fox in a hen house. But the new threats of hacker intrusion, data theft, and cyber terrorism have heightened concerns about network security. Increased government regulations regarding consumer privacy and data security are testing business priorities. The result in return of an old debate in boardrooms over whether or not to hire hackers to catch hackers.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, that's why I just read the article. Go ahead. What do you think about that?
I like wearing a suit and talking on a cell phone all day. Look, if you're going to be a security guy and it's your job to maintain the security, you better know exactly what they're doing to break into it. Like, if I was designing an alarm system for someone's house, I'd have to practice breaking into people's houses.
Listen, this is all, okay, listen, this is all syntax. This is all it is. If you consider yourself a hacker and you want a job, you call yourself a security expert.
Yeah.
That's it. It's all syntax. If you feel offended by all this article, then just shut up and don't get a job. Just stay home all day and let your mom cook you peanut butter jelly sandwiches. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. That's it. Let's just change what you call yourself.
What?
You're not a pedophile. You're just a glorified daycare worker.
Hell yeah, and I love fucking little kids.
Getting the old teeny brown eye.
Teeny brown eye.
Yeah, man, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Okay, how about a short one? Who's the latest comedian on the block? It's Wolf Blitzer.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Mr. Blitzer and some of his fellow CNN newscasters are about to find themselves an unlikely role of humorous pitchmen as
CNN,
they lend a hand.
The Communist News Network?
Yes. As they lend a hand to promotional efforts for CNN.com, the online arm of Time Warner cable news channel. Starting a few days ago, viewers of terminal cable channels will see ads for CNN.com featuring on-air personalities such as Anderson Cooper, Lou Dobbs, and Paula Zahn. The ads will also run on local cable and broadcast television and December's Regal Entertainment Group's regional cinemas. In one spot created with independent New York ad agency so-and-so, intrepid forward correspondent Christine Animalpour lectures an office worker on the correct way to pronounce Iran and Iraq. With an E sound, not an I. No, it's Eran, she says. It's just one of my bugaboos. The ads echo the popular promos for SportsCenter on Walt Disney's ESPN that show sports figures interacting with sportscasters at the ESPN corporate campus. With the Fox News Channel, owned by News Corp, and MSNBC, owned by General Electric and Microsoft, relying on star-driven programs such as The O'Reilly Factor and Scarborough Country, CNN may face pressure to have more of a personality. And indeed, while these spots are intended to drive traffic to CNN.com, they could also serve to an auxiliary purpose, adding edge and so-and-so, some French shit, to a channel known for its middle-of-the-road treatment of news.
When has CNN been a middle-of-the-road treatment of the news?
I don't know.
Last time I checked, they go with the Soviet Union version of the news. They're trying to get personality, huh?
Yeah.
Boy, they thought they needed it, or like, we thought we might need some personality.
Maybe Jon Stewart taught them a thing or two the other day.
That wasn't the other day.
Whatever.
It's like last month.
Look, I'm behind on the news. What do you think I fucking do? Like a news show or some shit?
CNN. Like, these are going to be like commercials like on theaters and shit. Okay, good. I'm not going to... Wait, what's all these fucking commercials in the movie theater? No, I'm not going to lie. I love trailers. I'll go there early just to see the trailers. But I'm getting tired of them pushing, like... You go sit down, they're pushing cars, and Coke of all things. What movie theater you go to and they have Pepsi? Name one.
Yeah, you're not going to one of those.
No. They sell Coke, so why push it?
Yeah.
If you want everybody to buy Coke, then have a fucking cover, a fucking drink limit. I mean, what's it called when you go to a bar? And they make you buy so much drinks.
Like a two-drink limit?
Yeah, have like a two-drink
minimum.
Limit.
Two-drink minimum.
Two-drink minimum.
Not limit.
They make you drink the tubby-tubby size Coke limit. Do you want the medium or the large? Do you want to swim or you want to float in your Coke?
Can you hold on just a second? I'm sorry. There's some noise in the house I got to investigate.
Okay.
Sorry, the puppy was eating Jennifer's shoe. All right, that was a quick article. Go.
What happened?
Dog was eating my wife's shoe.
Since we're talking about people on the news and stuff, check this out. This is something that everybody should be concerned about, this because this is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm done. Okay. Hollywood seeks Internet 2 test. P2P oversight. The Motion Picture Association of America is in talks with the Internet 2 Research Consortium, helping both to test next-generation video delivery projects and to monitor peer-to-peer privacy on ultra-high-speed network. Internet 2 is essentially a vastly faster version of the Internet run by universities and technology companies aimed at facilitating research into high-bandwidth hardware and applications and helping researchers who exchange a huge amount of data. Excuse me. Student file swapping traffic also has found its way onto the network, however. The MPAA has been talking with the research consortium for several months with an eye toward possibly joining the Internet 2 group as a member or simply opening up a collaborative relationship. This is a quote. We've been working with Internet 2 for a while to explore ways we can take advantage of delivering content at the extremely high speeds and basically manage content distribution at the same time, said Chris Russell, the MPAA's Vice President of Internet Standards and Technology. Those would go hand in hand, is a quote.
Mm-hmm.
The Internet 2 project has shown Hollywood the commercial potential and the dangers of a network powerful enough to allow a full DVD to be transferred even faster than the ordinary MP3 might be today. Damn, that's fast. Recently, researchers successfully sent data from Switzerland to Tokyo at speeds of 7.21 gigabits per second.
Jesus.
That was enough speed to transfer a full-length DVD anywhere in the world in less than 5 seconds.
Jesus.
Talks between Internet 2 and the Hollywood Group have been ongoing for almost a year. Following a speech that former MPAA Chief Jack Valenti, Satan, gave to university officials focused on problems of piracy and the probability of having any movie made available at a moment's notice. Okay. this is what technology, this is what the problem technology is facing today that didn't have to face 100 years ago. When you invented something in your house, you invented something, maybe it's some friends or whatever, okay, like-minded people. You didn't have, like, government standing over your shoulder and companies standing over your shoulder saying, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're working on this new technology for the Internet. You know, about broadband and the Internet 2 consortium, like I said. Now, the MPAA wants to stick a fucking dipshit up in there to see how can they... I don't know what they're going to do. I think implement technology to somehow get rid of file sharing?
Yeah.
How does that happen? That's just like fundamentally how the Internet works.
Well, they could just turn off the Internet and then not have to worry about all this.
Right. So. Are they going to like... I don't understand how they're going to... okay, file sharing is illegal. Okay, no need for anybody to be in there. Really?
Mm-hmm.
We already know it's illegal. What's this guy going to do in there? Is he just going to say, like, what, like, send a file across the network. That's how the Internet works, right?
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to stop file sharing?
I think the only thing they've come up with is they can scare you real good.
That's it. That is it. I think
yeah.
they should go after, you know, I think they spend too much time on the Internet thing. It's fruitless. I think they should go after people who sell them on the street for money.
Mm-hmm.
Who sell them with the Internet for money.
Yeah.
You know? But, of course, we've been over this 100 times before. People are going to be stealing something no matter what it is.
Shit.
There's people who go into, like, you know, say Mick Jagger stood in this apartment, right? He took, like, a couple shits and pissed, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's people who go after, like, you know, after he left, goes in there and tries to get, like pubic hair or some hair or a piece of clothes he might have left behind or a plate.
Yeah. I'll do that.
You know, I was watching a show. Some guy actually had a fork Dr. Dre used in a restaurant. He was all happy with it. This fork is all moldy and shit. But like I said, there's going to be people stealing something always. There's not anything in the world people don't steal.
Yes. Trying to think of what I stole today.
I'm always stealing shit.
I haven't really left my house today.
I stole a framed picture of Father Guido Sarducci. Everybody's too young to remember him. I'm even too young to remember him. He was a comedian on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, he's on XM Radio a lot.
He is?
Yeah.
He's still around?
Well, just they have a comedy channel, and they play his stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Father Guido Sarducci, it's a signed picture of
Excellent.
Him. And it talks about inventing the menthol flavor calzone for the Papa John's organization. And I stole that. I just picked it up and just walked out with it. I had to have that.
Excellent.
So, you can always be stealing something to keep you
in practice.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of stealing stuff and Internet, the Motion Picture Association of America announced its members filed their first batch of civil lawsuits against people who illegally share movies online, part of their scare tactic, including a substantial number of people who have just made a copy of a single movie available for others to copy. The MPAA has said this month it planned to file the suits, taking a page from the Recording Industry Association of America's playbook. The RIA has filed over 6,000 such suits in September 2003, but targets those with hundreds of song titles available to other Internet users. By going after low-volume file shares, the MPAA is signaling a tougher stance. Single-file defendants who are targeted by the movie industry will likely be people who are sharing a movie that hasn't yet been released into theaters, said people close to the situation. So, if you share The Goonies, you're pretty much okay.
The seven major studios, along with Lionsgate Entertainment, that are all filing suits for a total of more than 200, they're using a process in which they must first file John Doe suits against individuals whose identities they don't know beyond their IP address. Once those suits are filed, the industry may subpoena user information from Internet service providers and pursue lawsuits against those individuals. The MPAA also said it would soon make available a software program that helps Internet users identify movie and music titles stored on their computers, along with file sharing programs.
Well, that's like I was talking about before.
Yeah.
This is not going to hold anymore. They're going to want to spend too much money. They're going to wind up realizing it's fruitless, and it's all going to be just like something we laughed about like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They're going to get sick. They're going to get tired of suing people and wasting money on it. Because they can't win. Like, I'm sure they can win a couple of cases, but you got to realize they're just taking guesses from the name.
Yeah. I'm really... When I go back to college this spring, I'm going to put a computer on the network with movies on it that I make, and I'm just going to name them fancy stuff just to fuck with them.
Make like it's just a picture you just like movies just like masturbating and name
yeah.
it like I don't know, National Treasure
or whatever the cool movie then is.
Yeah, National Treasure in parentheses full version.
Divx coffee.
Yeah.
And wait to see how long it takes me to get in trouble.
I'm sure right away.
I know they monitor the network pretty good there at Ole Miss.
What's that?
They watch their network pretty closely there at Ole Miss.
Really?
Yeah.
Each, what are you going to stay in a dorm?
I'm just going to hook it up at the fraternity house. The Tri-Lands have pretty good, Internet connection. And what's funny is some of my fraternity brothers actually listen to the show.
Really?
Yeah. And I probably shouldn't call them the Tri-Lands.
Lambda, lambda, lambda. Can you do the dance?
No, but I like the song.
Go do the song. Do the song.
I'm not, no.
You can do it. Go ahead.
We should have made that our opening theme song.
If I could find that. Do it.
Oh, no.
I know you know the words.
Anyway.
Do it. Come on.
Back to you, Tom.
Okay, man. That's going to be the wrapping up of the show.
All right.
And our things of the week.
Okay. Let me click on my notepad. Quote, or this should be the site of the week, is, of course, cpsc.gov. It's where you can go and find out the recalled toys to get everyone for Christmas.
And what's that one more time?
CPSC.gov.
Cool. And what was the quote of the week?
It's actually an article I didn't get to read there because we didn't have enough time. It's about the CEO of SBC. And he was asked, why would consumers choose a phone company to bring television into their homes? And he actually replied, I think it's because we have a good, trustworthy, well-known name. We have a history of using our productivity gains not to raise rates but to provide better services or more services, and I think our reputation will help us a great deal here. Obviously, SBC is nothing like Bell South because whenever they figure out how
they?
To save money, they charge us more.
Who are they?
SBC Communications?
Never heard of them.
We don't have them around here because we have the Bell South. And I believe they were a small little shithead company in Austin, Texas. Let me see if it says. Yes. They.
It says in parentheses, small shithead company from Austin, Texas.
Actually, 16 years ago, they were a little shitty company in Austin, Texas. And they followed they acquired other Bell companies, Ameritech and Pacific Telesis.
Oh, okay.
And then doing so, SBC became the nation's second largest phone company.
Not doing bad for themselves, huh?
Using our productivity gains not to raise rates. Shit, Bell South is like, we can save an extra dollar by doing this,
and then we can charge them an extra dollar, and then we'll have two extra dollars. Hell yeah.
And we're going to wear Shirley Q of the week.
All right, kick it off, Shirley.
How you doing? This here is Shirley Q Liquor. Me and Watusi got a job down here at the grocery store. Yeah, we are sample ladies to pass out the samples of things. And it was a man saying, now, here go the product. It was some kind of nasty little sausages or something. And he said, now, fry them up real good. And every lady that come by, he said, stick a toothpick up in there and hold it under her nose. He said, wave it under her nose and tell her, don't this smell nice? Don't you want some of this here? And when the lady eat it, tell her, well, now you have to go buy some. Because you can't just have nothing. Nothing is free. So we sat up there at our little booth. And a lot of people came by and wouldn't even speak to us. They turn up their nose like, no, thank you. I don't care for none. I said, you know you hungry. I done been to your house. One lady came over there and said, oh, I don't care for none. I said, I've been to your house. You ain't got nothing to eat up in your house. I said, this is the only free food you're going to get today. This is your lunch. I said, you take this toothpick and you eat what's on here, or I'm going to shove it up your nose. And she ate it. She said, it tastes pretty good. And me and Watusi just took a purse full home, honey. We did. Oh, I had grease stains all on the bottom of my purse. Just full of them little things. All kinds of little sausages. The kids went crazy. I came home and throwed them all up in the air. I said, everybody, grab and get. Just go on and eat them, honey. I said, this is Happy Days is here again. Yes, Lord. They fired us. Oh, well. Tell your mama I asked her how she learned. Bye, honey.
Okay, thanks, Shirley. Why are you laughing?
Because Shirley's funny.
I don't think you ever listened to the show and actually make it to Shirley.
I listened to it the other day.
One day I was going to put a farting sound. You're going to be going like, oh, that was funny, Shirley.
You're such a faggot.
I know. And,
what's the term of the week, my friend? Do you know any of this stuff?
The term of the week is cancer.
Cancer.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I love cancer.
Well, I tell you can get cancer by not smoking, so there's no reason not to smoke.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
And that's wrong.
Yeah, whatever.
We shouldn't say shit like that. Our our word of the week. Term
word?
Is leprosy.
Leprosy.
When you never know if it's going to fall off. And our...
If you ever want a really good song about leprosy, Weird Al has a really, really awesome song.
Weird Al has a lot of awesome songs.
There's one about leprosy. And he's at Party at the Leper Colony. Go to Kaza and get it real quick.
No, buy that album.
Well, you'll hear how good it is. It's a whole awesome CD.
Nobody appreciate Weird Al like they should.
You know, he was the valedictorian of his class.
And he's an accomplished accordion player.
Well?
He's a college graduate. You know what he graduated at? I mean,
what?
His degree's in?
What?
You never guess.
Music.
Nope. He's an architect.
Architect?
Yeah.
Excellent.
He's a fucking architect. Anyway.
Somebody's looking at a house. They're like, well, here's a good design of my Weird Al.
This kind of looks like Pee Wee Herman's Playhouse. Anyway, the closing meeting is going to be by a band called The Mentors.
The Mentors.
Yes, The Mentors. And it sums our feelings up about women. The song is called The 4F Club, which, of course, the 4F stands for Finder, Feeder, Fucker, and Forgetter. And until next week.
I've been Droops.
I've been Obfuscated, and we're Mickey Finn.
You got the fire, and she got me. If you fire her, then you fuck her for a little while. Rub it up on the doggy side. Rub it into the mat and squirt it right in her face. She's the biggest whack in the place. Then you ball her with her legs in the air. Or on the bed, or over a chair. You got to find her, leave her, fuck her, forget her. Big ugly airhead, scumbag. What do we do, men? Find her, feel her, fuck her, forget her. Find her, feel her, fuck her, forget her. Find her, feel her, fuck her, forget her. Find her, feel her, fuck her, forget her.
Come back for more! What do we do, men?
Fire! Fear! Fire!